Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to HealthyLife.net's Visionary Celebrity Series, a place where you get to call in and talk live to a world-renowned expert. Today's show is Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel, a world-renowned expert on mind-body medicine and patient empowerment. So let's welcome Dr. Bernie Siegel.
Hello, Dr. Bernie Siegel. Yeah, there are times I do need to welcome myself, and today I'm going to talk about that. I am 91 and a half, okay? And my wife died 6 years ago, and that had a profound effect on me, which I'll get into in a minute. But it, you know, because of the change in my life and what I'm doing, I thought, you know, how long do I want to be around? What's my feelings? And I've had a lot of experience with patients, too, who, you know, had the will to live and the wonderful things that happened because of their will to live. So I'm not going to, you know, share is this in a negative way. It's in a positive way when you want to make a choice about yourself or your life. Yeah, Monday, for instance, we have more suicides and illnesses and deaths. Why? Because people don't like their life. So Monday, it's, oh, I have to go to work again. I have to do this again. And they shut down. It's a chemical change in your body. So to jump back to my wife, as a matter of fact, I went out and did some things as usual and then went back to the house and went into the bedroom. Noticed she was still asleep, is what I thought. So I went over and took her hand to wake her up, and it was ice cold. And I knew as a doctor that the temperature of her body was due to the heart not beating anymore. And when I felt that pain, it was like somebody stabbed a knife into my back, right into my heart from the back. And it really hurt. And then I called to get help, and because my wife was having nurses come over every day. She had a lot of things going on. And I called them, and they came, and we took care of it. And I may add, and I think I will, that I worked out different sayings to put on her stone. And I thought, you know, I wanted people to have a message from our lives and not just, you know, walk by another headstone, but something that meant something. And there were a lot of poems I liked that I had chiseled into the stone when it was prepared. And our son, Jeff, apparently this came to him sort of in a dream, and he was emotional, and these are some of his words. As I got the message to Why Can't You See What You're Doing to Me by Elvis, he was hearing a song in his head. I was basically sad and crying all night, and today I didn't think of the date till suddenly I realized it's today. I love you, Mom. I miss you very much. I love you all, Jeff. I will love you all forever. Now, this is 6 years after his mother died, 2018. She was born on September 9th, 1930. I knew if she died, there would be a nine in it, because that was like her special number. And she died on January 19th, 2018. These are some things I chiseled into the stone. If I had to do it all over again, I'd do it with you. You're the best thing that ever happened to me. And down at the bottom, in the time of your life, live so that in that time, wondrous... So that in that wondrous time, you shall not add to the misery and sorrow of the world, but shall smile to the infinite delight and mystery of it. And that's a quote from William Saroyan. Now, I've still kept working with that loss. You know, do I want to keep going on? Do I want to get up in pain and sorrow, and et cetera, et cetera? At the same time, as a doctor, I noticed how often people chose when they were to die, and that's what I wanted to share with you, to not feel disempowered. You'll decide when you're going to do it, and I mean that. Even if you're desperately ill, you might say, oh, my so-and-so's coming on Monday to visit. I'm not going to die till Monday. And you'd be surprised that you wait, and they come. And when my mother developed cancer many years ago, I knew I was helping people to live longer, healthier lives if they had developed cancer. I knew she wasn't going to just lie down and die and disappoint her son. I mean, my mother was something else. But I also knew let me just say this first. The doctors couldn't get over her. They expected she's not going to do well, she'll die, and here she is living for years. And I said to them, she's living my sermon. She was not going to disappoint me. And they ended up using her as their teacher and started treating all their patients like her and spreading that message. But then when she went into the hospital to die, I said to her doctors, she's never going to die with me in the room. That would be a disappointment for me. So understand that when I leave her, I'm not being a bad son. I'm giving her permission to go. And sure enough, one of the times I left, you know, for half an hour, say, I'd do something else in the hospital, I came back and she said, you're right, your mother just died when you left. And so remember that. You have a hell of a lot more control over it than you may think you do. But when is the right time? And I'd say it's something you have to work out with yourself. Because I know the pain of her being gone, I thought, well, I might as well go and join her. But here I am, 5 years later, 6 years later, still around and still doing things. And some of it was even with this program that I'm on, talking. You know, I didn't for a while because it was hard to talk to other people, to do things. But I began to notice and got a kick out of it in some ways. Could even laugh. I'll tell you one that was wonderful when my father died. But giving people permission to go can help them enormously. And then they know they're not failures. And I know if I die, I'm not a failure. It's when I'm ready, I'll go. I hope I do it as quietly and peacefully as my wife did in your sleep. So there's no problem with it. And just remember that. But as I said, when she was at the hospital and I went off to do something else. And I came back and they said, you're right, you were gone, your wife died. And I knew she didn't want to upset me, so that was okay. My parents, in some ways, were the same. How they would do it, my father-in-law, I knew because of various disabilities, he was ready to go. And I told the staff that he was ready to go, because he said, no dinner, no pills, when we came to feed him and give him his medication. Those are his words, no dinner, no pills. And I went and told the nurses he's going to die tonight. And the next morning when I came in, they said, you're right, he died last night. And, you know, my father in the same way did it at a time when it fit in. And we all died laughing, believe that or not. I was going to the hospital to visit my father that day. He had heart trouble and with a lot of chest pain, things. His father had TB and other problems, and he had all kinds of issues. And he said, when we were home, I was with my folks then, visiting, he said, I need to get out of here. My mother said, he wants to get out of bed. Help your father. I said, Ma, he's not talking about his bed. He's talking about his body. He wants to get out of here. So he got permission. And don't forget that. You have permission, give your loved ones permission. Don't make it hard for them or feel like they're hurting you or doing you damage. So we admitted him to the hospital to have his final care and be comfortable. And again, I knew he's not going to die with me in the room. Then he's letting his son down, his wife down. And so he had a peaceful transition when we weren't there. And sometimes people will look at you and say, how can you leave your father? He's dying. I said, yeah, but he's going to keep suffering to not upset me and have him die while I'm in the room. He'd rather he die when I'm not in the room and make it a little easier on me. So remember, there are many ways to do it and to think about it. And, you know, then you're really helping other people that they don't just feel it as that empty space. It's something you did to make it easier for them. And remember that. So you can go to sleep and say goodbye. You can even write a note to people and tell them, I love you. That's probably, yeah. Love is immortal and makes all things immortal, while hate dies every minute. I forgot who said that, what poet. But you want to love somebody, live forever. You know, love them. Then you will live forever in their hearts. And my wife is here in many ways, because I mentioned she was born on September 9th, 9-9. So that was a wonderful number in our life. And her dying, all kinds of symbols came back and still do. Because when I went to the hospital, I don't know if I mentioned this on this show yet, but I still have a wristband. I have to pull it out. It's under my shirt sleeve. I went to the hospital with my chest pain. And as soon as I walked into the hospital, what do you think I heard? I went into the emergency room, and I heard a guy yell, put him in room 9! And I thought, oh, my wife's here already. I'll make a long story short. We were married on the 11th. So what was my case number? 3499-4497. Now you got the nines. The 444, two eights and a three are 11. 1-4 and 1-7 are an 11, the day we got married. And my number, 3-8-9, that's my, the number that's assigned to me whenever I'm in Yale Hospital. 3-8-9-3-9-6-6. 8 is a new beginning, so I knew I'd be okay. And then 3-2-3s, 2-6s, and 2-9s. Everything added up to 9. And I don't take that wristband off. And I show it to a lot of people. And they used to think I was crazy. Now they know I'm crazy. But they put up with me. Because it's like I know my wife's with me. And every time you get a new wristband that you walk in there. Oh, and besides that, before I even had signed in the emergency room, somebody yelled, put him in room 9. And then the hospital room, they kept me overnight because it wasn't ready yet. It was 819. I mean, I knew you'll be fine. Your wife's here taking care of you. And after a while, people stop thinking you're crazy because it's so true how all these coincidences happen that when you start walking over to them, they say, I know, all nines. So I don't have to show my wristband to anybody. They buy the package. And as I said, you know, father-in-law is saying no pills, no dinner. And I told the nurses he's dying tonight because that's what he said to us before he went to bed that night. And, and my mother-in-law, wow, she was an opera singer. And if there's one talent I don't have, it's singing. I'm an artist, literally. And I'm a visual person. And I finally, when I started dating her daughter, asked her, why do you keep shutting all the doors and windows when I come in the house? And she said, because you go to the piano and you plink away and sing, and it's horrible. I don't want the neighbors to suffer from your singing. And she said, if you're going to take my daughter out, you can't sing anymore in the house or the car. So I stopped. And she had a beautiful voice, incredible woman. I was always asking her to sing for everybody. And she was more critical of herself than I was. But anyway, I was at religious services. It was just this time of year also. And I saw the door to the synagogue open, and a cloud came into the room. And I mean it literally, a small cloud about 4 or 5 feet long, and then moved up the synagogue to over my head, and I heard my mother-in-law's voice, Bernie, I'm going to say goodbye. Thank you for everything. And the cloud went up and out. And I quickly jumped up, drove to the nursing home she had been in, went in, and a nurse saw me coming in and yelled, oh, you've heard. I said, my mother-in-law came and said goodbye. I didn't hear the news. She came and said goodbye. And twice in the operating room, once a patient, I could see a cloud come out of his body as it was open and operating. And I yelled, come on back. Jimmy, it's not your time yet. And his heart started beating again. And then, I know, excuse me for laughing, but that's how crazy I am to do things like that. Because the other time, I didn't know his heart had stopped. Finally, the anesthesiologist, because I was working away in his belly, and I heard the anesthesiologist say, Bernie, his heart stopped. I can't get it going. I'm calling the morgue to come and get his body. So I yelled out loud in the operating room, "Jimmy, come on back. It's not your time yet." And guess what happened? His cloud came back. His heart started beating again, and he recovered completely from the surgery. And as we were leaving the operating room, I loved the anesthesiologist for looking at me saying, "Bernie, I like working with you." You know, that I had done this crazy thing, and it literally saved somebody's life. So, if you want to ask somebody to come back, fine. But make sure that they're not coming back to more suffering. Because the surgery, I knew, was going to fix what had happened to him. He was having a trouble with bleeding from his intestine. And if you know you're going to cure it with some mechanical device or means, then fine, bring somebody back. But if they're just coming back to suffer because you can't deal with the loss, then stop. Don't do that. Give them permission to turn off the switch and to go. And if you look back at when people die, you'll see it's often meaningful days, you know, whether it's an anniversary, a birthday, a holiday, something meaningful to them. They'll do it. And we have a switch that we can put on and off. And I've seen animals, in a sense, do the same kind of thing at home. You know, dying peacefully with loved ones around them. And everybody gets a better feeling about that because you're completing something. You're completing your life. You're not losing it. You're completing it. And I get a lot of love from our just two cats are still here with me. They are so loving, and I'm sure they know, you know, I'm alone. And they're into bed, cuddling with me and keeping me company, and it's amazing. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about animals because they make a difference in terms of our relationships, our health, and our survival. So we'll see you and hear each other back in a minute.
Book of Miracles by Dr. Bernie Siegel contains inspiring stories of healing, gratitude, and love. Heartwarming and heart-opening, these stories were gathered from decades of his medical practice. The stories are riveting, warm, and demonstrate what we are capable of. They show that we can achieve miracles as we confront life's difficulties. Discover the importance of how changing from the inside out opens the door for a miracle to take place, and more, in Dr. Bernie Siegel's new book, A Book of Miracles. Get it now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or your favorite bookstore. Dr. Bernie Siegel's A Book of Miracles.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? Would you feel scared or proud? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Would you rather make your own way or spend a lifetime saying, "What if?" Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
Before you go to bed in the middle of the night when you can't sleep, or in the morning fresh from dreams, Dr. Bernie Siegel is up ahead of you. The light is on at his writing desk. Maybe, amazingly, he's been mulling over the very same thing you've been thinking about. Introducing Words and Swords, the new series of journaling journeys with poetic thoughts by Bernie Siegel, M.D. Each of Bernie's poems is paired with space for you to express your feelings and thoughts, providing you with the opportunity for healing, growth, and to laugh a little with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Order Words and Swords now at 800-723-0336. That's 800-723-0336.
Love Magic and Mud Pies is a brand new book by Bernie Siegel, MD. It helps you raise your kids to feel loved, be kind, and make a difference. Bernie, a husband of over 50 years, father of 5 children, and grandparent of 8, shares the gems of wisdom he has gathered from his practice and his own family life. Using his caring, comforting, down-to-earth style, Bernie's book answers parenting questions and gives you a wealth of quotes, anecdotes, and parenting tips, delivered with just the right dose of compassion, inspiration, and gentle humor. Love Magic and Mud Pies, an insightful, supportive, must-have guide on every aspect of parenting. Love Magic and Mud Pies by Bernie Siegel, MD, is available on Amazon.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Order it today. And don't forget to hear Bernie Siegel's show, Mind Health Matters, right here on HealthyLife.net.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Hello again, everybody. Now I'm 91 and I forgot what I was talking about when we left. So being 90 is a good excuse. You can say, I forgot. Oh, I didn't remember that. You know how old I am. You'll be given a break. Because if you're only 19 and you don't remember, nobody's going to give you an excuse. But it's what's in your heart that matters. You don't forget that. And the thing that I realized was it's really the energy flow. I was just talking during the break that somebody came over to bring me, you know, dinner and stay and be company that evening. And she said she was amazed because she hadn't seen me in a long time. Hearing, you know, I'm 91, she wanted to do me a favor, bring me a dinner. And then she walks in and I'm looking okay. I'm not looking 91. Say I'm looking 81. It's really where your energy is, what you're doing. So you can be sparked up and doing things and, yeah, like I was going around the world, literally, to lecture, to help people, to teach them, and, you know, but I did. I got tired after a while and thought, you know, I don't need to sit in airports and sit on planes and all that stuff, and especially with the technology. So if you've got the computer and Zoom, people can see you, hear you talk, and That's what I prefer now, that I could stay home but be with people because of my appearance and my language is with them. Oh, and popped into my head, I think, what I was going to talk about. The other thing that helps you stay alive, and maybe more than some doctors, is having pets. You know, I mentioned that I've just got 2 cats here now, Hope and Princess. And we used to have dozens of animals. And they're with me, loving me all the time. I'm sure they know how I'm feeling. And I've told that on this show. When my wife died, they made me breakfast. Now, how did 2 cats make you breakfast? To make a long story short for those that didn't hear it, when I got out of bed the morning after my wife died, they walked with me all the way to the kitchen, cackling away. Meow. I thought, what the hell's happened in the house? That they're telling me something's wrong. But when I got to the kitchen, there were dead chipmunks. And I knew the cats were saying, we made breakfast for you. Here it is. Oh, and I had to tell them, I don't eat chipmunks. I thank you for caring, but I don't eat chipmunks. And then they stopped. But they still give me a lot of time. And some studies, you see, that show you about, it's about relationships. Doctor in Australia, cardiologist, and he said he had, when I was talking to him, he said he had to go to a lot of homes, drive there, because Australia, and they would spread all over the place. So he would get in his car and drive around. And another one in Hawaii said the same kind of thing. This is somebody who had died of cancer when she went there to visit her mother, that he found interesting. But the cardiologist said when I went to the houses and the patients were still doing well, there was always a pet. There's always a dog running around the house. And so he began to prescribe dogs to people. And the woman who went to Hawaii where her mother was and died, and she stayed and died there too. But you could feel their presence as well. Just the love that they gave each other. And when we got there, I've told this before, her spirit was still there as a butterfly. And a butterfly joined us when we got off the plane and went into a pharmacy to get some medications while we were there. This butterfly flew over, landed on my wife's hand when she held it up to rescue it from the store, and then went to the hotel with us in the car, up the elevator, into our room. And I remember that night saying to my wife, you can't sleep with a butterfly. You got to get rid of it, because it stayed with us all day. So my wife went out on the porch, said, okay, brushed it off my shoulder. I said, look at your other shoulder. It was on her other shoulder. I said, put some food on the table. When it goes to eat, let's jump into bed so we don't crunch it under us. And we did that. And the butterfly spent the whole weekend with us at a workshop, literally flying overhead where the workshop was. It was outdoors. And then it would go back to the hotel with us and back to the workshop. And when my wife tried to get rid of it, when we were done, she said, I'm going to go out on the porch and brush it off my shoulder. Fine. She came back and said, okay. I said, no, dear, look at your other shoulder. It came back in on her other shoulder. And we had to talk to it and reason with it and tell it that we were leaving and had to go back to the States. And finally then it took off when we were going to the airport, and we were free and felt better and thankful at the same time. So remember, there are a lot of powers in the universe and that are in us. But you've got to give your body the proper message. As I said, Monday's the day more people die. And when people learn they're going to die and then eliminate Mondays from their life, you know, you're going to die, well, then I'm not going to have a lousy day. I'm just going to go and do what I want to do. I'm not going to work. I'm just going to have some fun, sit outside, go to the beach, whatever I want to do. As one man said to me, and I've said this here, I'm sure, when he went to Colorado to die in the mountains, and I called up 2 years later to really give the family hell, because I told them I wanted to be at his funeral. I really felt close to him. And they hadn't called me for 2 years. And he was due to die in a few months. And he answered the phone. And he said, it was so beautiful here, I forgot to die. And I know businessmen who did the same thing. One guy was introducing me at a lecture I was giving. And he was dressed like a bum. You know, I didn't know how he felt he could get up on the stage and introduce me looking like he looked. Just worn old clothes. And afterwards I said to him, how can you get up there and talk like that? You know, dressed like that. He said, when I tell you you're going to die in a few, you know, weeks, what's the difference what you're wearing? And then he didn't die in a few weeks. But his employees, he noticed, began to change, because he had a code at work, you know, a dress code, and you had to wear a tie and a suit and the women in certain dresses and blah, blah, blah. And he began to notice how all his employees were changing, and he realized, oh, it's me. I can't criticize them now. And so they all relaxed, wore what they wanted to. Business was fine, even better. And he lived a lot longer than everybody expected him to, while enjoying himself. And it's the same. It's a chemical message. You're giving your body a message that I love life. I love being here. And believe me, get some pets. One study, because some of these things I might have said before on the show, I don't know, but a study that was done by a physician, and he noted that when he asked Harvard students to put on their form if they had a dog, and then he looked them up years later, what did he find? He found that those who had a dog in the house and felt loved by their parents, that was another important part of it, I didn't mention it. Did your parents love you? Their death rate was way lower. I forgot the numbers. Now, the death rate was way down versus those who said, no, I didn't have a pet and my parents didn't love me. Yeah, one of the statistics was 75% of those who had a negative answer had experienced a serious illness by middle age. If they said, yes, my parents loved me, yeah, I had a nice bed, only 25% had suffered a major illness. And I know in our house, despite the fact we have 5 kids, yeah, some of them had an illness now and then, but it wasn't anything life-threatening or dangerous. In our house, I always called it the Seagull Zoo because we had every variety of animal. And I'm sure I must have said this before, but to show you the relationship, the ducks and geese and chickens that one of our kids loved raising, they would hatch in the house in fish tanks. I mean, there was no water in them, but they were glass, big glass tanks. And so you could see when the eggs cracked and then take them out and, you know, put them outside in a special place. And what we noticed was they began, when they grew up, those creatures, to try to go to school with our kids. Because we live in a long downhill driveway in a circle. And the school buses would come, go around the circle, stop at the driveway. And our kids, there are 5 kids, would start walking down to the bus. And behind them would be the ducks and geese and everything. And they all tried to jump up onto that first metal step in the bus. And thank God the bus drivers laughed and thought it was funny, instead of screaming at me that I'm going to slow down their trip to the school. but it was very obvious to people that it was about love. And then when we take these ducks and geese year after year, my mother and father lived on a lake, and we would dump them in the lake. The first time we did it, 2 days after we left them, my mother called, Bernie, what is it, Ma? Why do the ducks and geese come up to the road every time a school bus comes? Oh, I almost cried because I said, oh, Ma, they're looking for our kids. I feel terrible that they feel they've lost their connection with our family. But they reattach to everybody else. And I think, don't forget that, that's all. Love means something to us. It changes our chemistry. And I mean that literally. It changes your internal hormones, stress hormones, all those things, when you're living in peace, with peace. Yeah. So, do it for yourself, do it for others. But the other is, I'd say to parents, don't forget to say, I love you. That's very different than I like you or what you're doing. I may not like what you're doing, but I want you to know I love you. And the same thing is true with patients. You can reparent them. You know, Bernie Siegel can become your parent when you're having surgery, when you develop cancer or some other problem. How does he do that? By showing you he cares about you. And then you feel different. You feel worthy. You feel like somebody. He's taking care of me. And it touches everybody. Because, you see, if people see a difference, they don't need a sermon. I was considered nuts at the hospital. I mean it. They'd work with drawings, with music, you know, with words, like hypnotizing people. It wasn't really being hypnotic and you know, a spell, or it was how I talked to them, that certain words gave them suggestions, not frightening them, but making them feel better. Well, let me give you one example I just thought of with kids. Every time I'd come up with an alcohol, you know, sponge and injection of xylocaine to numb their skin for some work I was going to do on them, I'd say, you're lucky, because this is going to numb your skin and you won't feel any further needles or surgery and everything will be fine. And I'd rub the alcohol on, and I told them that would numb their skin so they wouldn't feel the needle that came after it. And they'd all say, I mean it, all of them, oh, why don't the other doctors do that? That's so good. I didn't feel it. Yeah. That convinced the people in the hospital, the nurses, anesthesiologists, that even though Siegel's crazy, he's right. Some things work. So don't be afraid to, what I call, lie to your kids. But it's positive. You can call it hypnosis if you want to. Because our kids used to get mad at me for saying, we hear you lie to your patients. I said, well, it's hypnotizing them. It's a positive statement that isn't, you know, part of what we always tell them, that this will numb your skin, you won't feel it, et cetera, et cetera. Because that was an alcohol sponge. I'd say, this will numb your skin. And I'd just rub it, and, you know, to clean the skin, but tell them it numbed it at the same time. And 99% of the time, the reaction from kids would be, why don't the other doctors do that? And it works. Mind is a powerful thing. So make connections with your healthcare providers and everybody and your kids. Because my kids, and maybe you don't want to use the word lying, because our kids used to get mad at me. They'd hear me saying it, and they'd say, why do you lie to your patients? And I explained to them, it wasn't really lying. It was like hypnotizing. So they would have positive results, and then they would thank me for what I said and did. Any questions from anybody who's listening to me in the studio or anywhere? If you have a question, ask me. Then I'll get talking again. But I'd say another quote popped into my head. When you live in your heart, magic happens. So remember that. Live in your heart. So when somebody says you need to make a choice, what do you want to do? Let your heart make up your mind. All right, we'll take a break for a minute.
before you go to bed, in the middle of the night, when you can't sleep, or in the morning, fresh from dreams, Dr. Bernie Siegel is up ahead of you. The light is on at his writing desk. Maybe, amazingly, he's been mulling over the very same thing you've been thinking about. Introducing Words and Swords, the new series of journaling journeys with poetic thoughts by Bernie Siegel, M.D. Each of Bernie's poems is paired with space for you to express your feelings and thoughts, providing you with the opportunity for healing and growth, and to laugh a little with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Order Words and Swords now at 800-723-0336. That's 800-723-0336.
What does HealthyLife.net and Amazon.com have in common? Well, they're both available on the internet. They both give great value. But most important, most of our positive program hosts and guests are accomplished authors, and their books are available from, you got it, Amazon.com. Now, it even gets better than that, because when you're listening on air to a HealthyLife.net host or guest, you can go directly to Amazon.com and you can order your book while you're still listening to your favorite HealthyLife.net program. So when you hear an author you like, go to the homepage of HealthyLife.net and click on Amazon.com.
The Book of Miracles by Dr. Bernie Siegel contains inspiring stories of healing, gratitude, and love. Heartwarming and heart-opening, these stories were gathered from decades of his medical practice. The stories are riveting, warm, and demonstrate what we are capable of. They show that we can achieve miracles as we confront life's difficulties. Discover the importance of how changing from the inside out opens the door for a miracle to take place, and more, in Dr. Bernie Siegel's new book, A Book of Miracles. Get it now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or your favorite bookstore. Dr. Bernie Siegel's A Book of Miracles.
What can you learn from exceptional patients? Plenty. No matter what disease you are dealing with, Dr. Bernie Siegel's book, Peace, Love, and Healing, can help you identify the hidden factors that may be stopping you from getting well. What are the hidden factors? Are you ready? Guilt and blame. Find out how guilt and blame is related to your lifestyle and illness. In Peace, Love, and Healing, Bernie, as he likes to be called, will tell you what steps you can take to heal a life and cure a disease. Peace, Love, and Healing. Get it today at fine bookstores or at Bernie's website, ecap-online.org.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Okay, folks, so another quote came into my head. When you live in your heart, magic happens. And whether you're trying to get over an illness, have something else happen that's right for you, live in your heart. You know, I mentioned when we started how my wife just died a few years ago. And how I met her, how accidents happen. I took a job as a counselor at a camp one summer. I was in college. And I was with the first grade boys. I was a low man on the totem pole because I was, the others were more trained to take care of kids and do things. The head counselor for first grade girls was my future wife, really pretty lady. And so we were watching the kids swim, you know, to protect them. And I said, it's really nice that the camp warms the water. They put in electric heaters. And she said, are you asking me to take a swim at night? And I thought, hey, say yes. What do you got to lose? So I said, yes, oh, yes, I'd love to take you out for, you know, come for a swim. She said, all right. And that's when I met her mother, the opera singer, and was told if I was going to take a daughter out, I couldn't sing in the house or the car because of how poorly I sang. But we ended up getting married. And even my father said, why is she going out with him? She is so pretty. He didn't tell it to me, but he told it to my mother. Why is she going out with him, our son? But we both liked pets, and we loved children. My former wife was a school teacher, first grade, and there many times I would go to school, and when I had a day off from medical school, and spend the day with her, helping her with a mob of kids in the classroom. And it was really wonderful. And we were meant for each other. As much as people may have questioned why she was saying yes to that guy, we were meant for each other. We had a lot in common. And it was, you could say, heaven on earth in many ways. That doesn't mean that we didn't have arguments or things at times, or, you know, that her husband had bad habits and, you know, didn't always do the right things and take care of everybody in the house. But we loved each other. We loved each other. And the funniest part was, after three boys, I got her to try again because I wanted a daughter. And when she learned she was going to have twins, she said, if it's two more boys, I'm not coming home from the hospital. And thank God the first one out was a girl. The second was a boy. The obstetrician knew my problem, so he said, what a gentleman! He let his sister out first. So I knew I was safe. And my wife would let me come home. And you talk about mind-body. We were told we would have the twins, like, on Christmas Day or just before. And my wife said, I'm not going to be in a hospital on Christmas. And I knew there was mind-body. She wouldn't. When did she have the kids? The day after Christmas. Think about it, see? And I named our daughter Carolyn because all the Christmas carols were playing. So we called her Carolyn. And thank God I have my one daughter. She's a lot of help managing me now that my wife has died. Yeah, the boys are a big help too. But it's more mechanical. Like if I have trouble with the computer or things in the house, they'll fix it. They'll get it running again. I'm amazed at how they know all this stuff. They grew up with it all. And it's a pleasure. So we got four boys to do mechanical things and one girl to do keep your heart intact and working. And as I said, we both liked animals, so we had them all over the place. I put up fences around the house so they, and pet, you know, pet doors so they could go out to pee or poop or whatever. And I knew they couldn't run away in the woods because I had the fences put up. And why did I have fences? Because they're so darn smart. They could climb bushes and get over things, but if I put up fences with vertical beams, they couldn't grab them. They'd slide. And we all lived together. And that's where Miracle was, you know, the one who was in the dog show. Miracle, Penny, Dickens, Gabriel. Yeah, Dickens. I brought home another cat. I was always bringing home all kinds of cats and dogs. And this cat was always getting into things, and I'm yelling, you little devil. And my wife finally said, stop yelling devil. That's not a nice thing to do. And then I hear her one day say, oh, you little Dickens, you shouldn't be doing that. So he became Dickens. And as I say, we had plenty of dogs, all kinds of names too. And they, a part of you, a lot of pictures around. And I paint. I mentioned I was an artist, And there are paintings of all our kids, myself, my wife, enormous numbers of the pets. But they were so intelligent. My wife used to feed the creatures who lived in the woods. She'd sit outside with them, and she was their friend. And one raccoon, he was called, because he used to break in if my wife didn't put food out for him and sit down with him outside. And as crazy as that sounds, you know, when the lights went on at night in the house, raccoons would show up on our porch. My wife would go out and sit down and feed them. And if she forgot, then they'd come up, and one was called Beggar. My wife named him. Why? Because he'd come up to the screen, which was still closed, that she hadn't gone out and opened it, you know, to get to them. And he would tear the screen open and come into the house. And they didn't fight with the other animals. They just came in to get something to eat. So he was called Beggar because eventually he learned to just stand there like a begging position with his front feet up in the air. And my wife would see him, and she'd go right out and feed him. And I'm laughing because the only animal in control, however, if it showed up, was a skunk. I used to laugh until it sprayed, because it would come up, and every other creature would zoom out of there, off the porch, run away. And if my wife didn't feed them immediately, the skunks would spray the porch and into the house, and oh God, it was awful. And that's when you realize there are a lot of ways of having power, that when a skunk showed up, it was in power, not some big, you know, dog, but the little skunk. So remember, the right technique can gain you power, and a lot of it is you and what you teach others. And your peace that's inside. Yep. And I keep thinking of quotes like one of our kids, life sucks. Most people suck. And if you wake up one day and the world's beautiful and everyone loves one another, you're dead. Yeah, I laughed when they would say that because I knew they weren't really depressed, but it was just they wanted something from me. And if you give it to them, then they'd be happy. And that was about love. I'll finish with that quote. One of our twins, the boy, came to me one day and said, "You don't love me as much as you do Jeffrey." I said, "What are you talking about? You give him more time than I get." I said, "That's because he causes so much trouble. I have to be with him a lot more. You don't make trouble." But I thought, for a little kid, to feel that, it really told me about how to be a better parent. Spend time with them. Let them know you love them. Yeah. And even though the other kids are causing trouble, give the good kids some time too. Okay. And when you live in your heart, magic happens.